notebooks and newsbeats, hear that piano rail. Take down the facts, Ace, write up the tale. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet, if only they turn left on Bird Street. Don't be a fool, Ace, trust nothing they say. Follow the money, make them all pay. Under a headline, over a beer, truth plainly told is what they most fear. Deadlines and dreamers, someday we'll meet down at the dark end of Bird Street.
And now, recorded live in Studio C at KRBS Radio, it's Dan and Tom with Left Turn on Bird Street.
Welcome to Left Turn on Bird Street. I'm Dan Gilworthy, and this is
Tom Nato.
We're broadcasting from our flagship station, KRBS, in Oroville, California, the city of gold in the Golden State. And we're also heard now on KQRP in Salida, California.
But as an important tactical move and technological step backwards, maybe, we're recording this show at our new Studio C located in Marysville, California, better known to historical gourmets as Cannibal City. Among this town's founders were survivors of the infamous Donner Party, the stranded 49ers who ate their Indian guide to avert starvation while snowbound in the High Sierra.
You can also catch this show on the air if you're in the range of KRBS 107.1 FM. Low power FM radio in Oroville, California, or you can hear us and other KRBS personalities web stream live at www.radiobirdstreet.org, or you can catch us later by going to Left Turn on Bird Street's blog at www.ltobs, emphasis on the BS there, .blogspot.com, and click on the episode links in the right column, or you can click it up at our website. So, Tom, what are we going to talk about, and who do we have as guests?
For starters, we have war, disaster, political action, corruption. Aren't they the same thing, though? Politics and corruption? Technology and kinky sex with whips and chains. And for a guest, in this segment or the next, we'll have Chuck Smith, a labor activist.
Well, I can't wait till we get to the kinky sex and whips. That's probably going to be the very last thing. It's like a news teaser like they do on television and radio. Hey, we're radio. But first, let's do a little bragging and say a few thanks to the folks at Radio Shack who sold us all these gizmos. And
John, that was his name. Oh, right. So you see how impressed I was. No, these guys were great. They really helped us set up what essentially is a mini studio here at our C Street studio.
In
Studio C Street. Marysville, where is actually my house.
Well, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. We're heard every other week on KRBS from 8 till 9:55 in the morning.
Or 3 or 4 times a day at KQRP.
In Salida. So thanks for joining us. And like we said earlier, you can... if you want to listen to this program later, you can go to our blog at www.ltobs.blogspot.com and download our program. And, you know, the other thing that we're going to be doing, Tom, let's go get right into this right away. You know, showing that even though we're middle-aged guys, we're trying to keep up with the young people, and we're going to try to start podcasting this show.
Right. Well, as soon as we get this system set up and figured out and smoothed out, we're going to look into converting into MP3 so we can then also iPod podcast.
Yeah. So, you can't
even get away from us when you're riding a city bus, or whether there'll be a kid next to you listening to his iPod, and possibly us.
Well, you know, the whole thing with iPods and like the technology we're using and stations like KRBS is we're really, it's an alternate form of media, and, you know, we're commercial free, and that's a big thing. And it's the commercial free is not just from the aspect of the annoyance of commercials, which are generally annoying, but just the influence that commercial advertising has on media outlets.
I want to get something straight. That iPod, that POD pod,
yes,
that stands
yes,
for
yes.
Uh, pay on demand?
Pay on demand. I think it does, actually. Because it's not that old. iPods really are a device for people to go and download music off the internets. There's two of them, you know, according to George W. Bush.
Well, there's ours and then his.
And yeah, right. But, you know, a lot of other media outlets now are podcasting. And it's, yeah, I think it's a, you know, and I'll grant that I'm sometimes slow to engage technological change. But I think the hidden beauty of podcasting is that people, first of all, they can skip over commercials, so they don't have to listen to commercials, and it gives other people like ourselves the opportunity to broadcast fairly inexpensively and get our message out.
Yeah, but you know, that's one of my disappointments with podcasting.
What's that?
Is that most of it are kids playing other people's music.
Right.
And they're not, or at least the ones I've been hearing about or reading about, aren't necessarily using it as a outreach program for their ideas or for communicating with each other.
Right. Well, you got to remember, how long has podcasting been around for?
About a year.
A year? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so it's not, it, you know, if we're to compare this to a person, it's not even walking yet. It's not even talking. It's in its infancy.
And you know, the reason I know that is because I stay abreast of things way before I can afford to buy them.
Right, right. Well, in fact, you're the one who told me about podcasting about a year ago, and I kind of looked at this with a somewhat jaundiced eye, and I'm beginning to embrace it now. I have the same concerns with you, though, that you know, kids, you know, I'm not using that in a derogatory sense, but kids, you're right, they download music and they listen to it on the bus or, you know, when they're walking around, so they kind of isolate themselves from the world. But my understanding is that podcasting can also be used to, you know, download music onto your computer or news programs and listen to it at a later point or a later time at your convenience.
Right. You know, there's something else about this phenomenon of kids with earphones and CD players and... you know what background music is?
Yes.
Right. Well, looking at the blank stares on these kids, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if this is just not a whole generation of background music that they're half listening to and not necessarily paying attention to what's going on around them.
Right.
And so it's making them dumber. Now, we keep saying because they can push more buttons and get it to come up faster than we can,
right,
that they're smarter. I don't think so. They just,
right.
It's not smarter to know how to turn on the TV and adjust the color.
Right.
You know, that's not smart. It's being able to design the machine that puts it in color.
Well, you know, you bring up a valid point, and we have several other topics to discuss. So I don't want to go too far afield on this, but bear with me on this. I was reading a story about the protests in Washington, D.C., and
which are going on today, right now.
Right. And I'll tie this together. But,
or yesterday.
Eventually I'll tie it together. I have a meandering way of doing it. But, you know, I saw photos of who are the prominent people that were in this protest. Well, Cindy Sheehan, for one thing. She's a middle-aged person. She's about the same age as me, late 40s. Who are the other prominent people at this protest? Jesse Jackson and Joan Baez. Now, where the question I have, and this is how I tie it into the iPod, where were young activists? Where were they? Were they just not given the exposure? Did they not organize it? And the point being is, you know, is this part of a, you know, people are podcasting, the youth of our country listen to podcasts. Are they disassociated with what's going on in the world?
Pardon me because I'm pulling this out of memory, United for Peace and Government or Peace in Action or
right.
Anyways, United for Peace. It's there's a very active group. I don't know how old they are. I think they're a lot younger than they're not necessarily 60s veterans.
Right.
And so there's something going on, but we're not seeing it reported. And I think that you're seeing that Jesse Jackson and Joan Baez, because they're interested. They still care about it, but also they're carrying a lot of baggage from the past. A lot of people hate them automatically.
Right.
And I think TV is presenting them as spokesmen so that they're True. Encouraging the public to hate them. Oh, same old, same old.
True.
You know, voices Good out point. Of the past, get rid of them, let's change the channel and watch something else.
Right. But I guess bringing back the conversation to podcasting, on the plus side, it really gives the opportunity to people like ourselves and you know, hundreds and thousands of other people to have their voice heard over the Fox News's, CNN's, ABC News.
In other words,
world.
It's a medium that begs to be used better and could really change things in terms of public opinion.
Right, absolutely. And that, I think that's the real value of this is that, you know, I've read where, and it's fairly, you know, this is common knowledge, most of our youth get their news not from newspapers, but primarily from the internet and, unfortunately, TV. But I think the podcasting will be an extension of this. So podcasting will, I think it will be a big influence in the years to come. So I think
we have that story. Just before we get off it, is I gave you that story from the BBC.
Oh, yeah. Let me see if I can find it.
They're saying podcasting is taking off. And, you know, the BBC pretty much knows what's going on in that respect.
Yeah, and the name of this, the title of the story from the BBC is Radio Has Its Eye on Podcasters. Hey, Tom, maybe there's a chance for us here in the future. You want to read a little bit about that story?
Well, they're saying that podcasters have already inspired conventional radio stations to evolve, but their podcasts will increasingly be on the radars of traditional radio broadcasters as fertile grounds to feed the desire for new talent.
New, that's us,
Dan,
baby.
That's us, Dan. And ideas. Now, ideas, I don't know. Both of the BBC and Virgin, I knew one of those ones.
Yeah, me too.
Will watch what podcasters do, learning from them, just as podcasters learn from radio, and I want to point out from each other.
Right.
It won't be too long before this podcasting becomes the normal route to discover new talent, says Chris Kimber, head of BBC Radio Interactive. Well,
whoa.
I'm sending him an email.
Yeah, right. We should be at the top of their list. We've been doing this for, golly, almost 2 years now,
oh,
Tom.
This is 2 years.
2 years. Well, 2 years, October 13th.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, so, you know, our second anniversary is coming up, and we need to get in podcasts, and maybe this will be our break. You know, we could have been a contender.
Mm-hmm. We are contenders.
Well, we've beat that to a
halt now.
Let's
get the actual news.
Let's get the actual news. First story we want to talk about is, and you know, hold your laughter, because before I talk about this news source, let me just say that it is a news source that everybody, myself included, loves to laugh at. We poke
never
fun at.
Never been successfully sued until recently.
Right. Yeah, that's right. They have never been successfully sued. And we are talking until recently, none other than everybody's favorite grocery store tabloid, the National Enquirer.
Ah, oh, the tab of the future.
That's right.
And the past and the present.
Just as a side note, you know, I put a comment on one of our
News
on
of the World is pretty good too.
Yeah, that's one. I was actually thinking about that this morning. Did you ever see the movie Men in Black?
Yes, I did.
There was a great scene in there where Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith are like a little newsstand in New York City, and you know, Will Smith picks up the New York Times or the Post or whatnot. And then Tommy Lee Jones goes right for those things, you know, I gave birth to an alien baby. He says, what are you doing? He says, hey, these are my leads for finding aliens, you know. This stuff's really true. that was a pretty good movie. That was the best part of that movie. You
know, I think I've mentioned this once before on the air, is that when I was working for a newspaper in Humboldt County, California, the paper of record there.
Right.
One of the other reporters made his pin money writing oddball stuff for the National Enquirer.
Is that right?
He tried to get me to do it. And I said, I'm not really, I'm a cop reporter here, and I don't know anything. He said, not national. You know, it's like two-headed goats born in that kind of stuff.
Oh, just as another,
I should have taken him up on it.
You know, just as another side note, you're right. Until recently, the National Enquirer has never been successfully sued. They have broken some big stories in the past, and they've been accurate. I mean, just even though he was acquitted, just think of Michael Jackson. They've been writing about this guy for years, and Jackson was acquitted, recently, but those stories must have had some merit through the years about Jacko. The other thing about the National Enquirer, before we get into the story that they broke recently, is, did you, you know, I read this a few years ago, and I can't cite my source, but I know from memory serves me correctly that the reporters for the National Enquirer are amongst the highest paid reporters for a national media outlet. They are. And another thing to keep in mind, let's just frame this like a good politician, we're going to frame this. Do you remember what happened a month or two after the 9/11 attacks? What was the big other terrorist threat we had? It was the anthrax.
Oh, right.
And,
yeah.
You know, these guys, whoever mailed the anthrax, mailed it to Democratic offices like Daschle, former Senate Minority Leader Tom Daschle, and to American, I think the American Media is a company that owns National Enquirer, and they actually killed one of their employees down there.
That's right.
I mean, keep that in mind. Yeah. They targeted, NBC News?
This is the case that the FBI could solve but wouldn't arrest anybody.
Right. They have people of interest.
Which tells you exactly which part of the government was doing the mailing.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And was it NBC News that got, I think it was NBC News also got one. But it was all interesting. You know, it was always curious to me why these terrorists would choose the National Enquirer, because they're derided by everybody, but maybe they had something on them and they use it as a threat. But that's speculation.
Or they knew that it would make the biggest headlines. You seen how big those headlines are on the National Enquirer?
But anyhow, Tom found this story the other day, very interesting, in the National Enquirer. And again, let me frame this. This is not the first time we've talked about this particular issue on this show. And we'll get to some of the stories that we referenced going back almost 2 years now. But go ahead, Tom. What's the name of this story from National Enquirer?
Bush's Booze Crisis.
Ooh,
by
boozing
Jennifer Luce and Don Gentile, or Gentile.
Gentile?
Well, there was a baseball player that was Gentile, spelled right, the same way, and Gentile is the ordinary pronunciation of that word.
Right.
Anyway, whatever he is, he did a good job. Faced with the biggest crisis of his political life, President Bush has hit the bottle again, the National Enquirer can reveal. Bush, who said he quit drinking the morning after his 40th birthday, has started boozing amid the Katrina catastrophe. Family sources have told how the 59-year-old president was caught by First Lady Laura downing a shot of booze at their family ranch in Crawford, Texas, when he learned of the hurricane disaster. His worried wife yelled at him, "Stop, George!
Stop! Stop, I say!"
Following the shocking incident, disclosed here for the first time, Laura privately warned her husband against falling off the wagon and vowed to travel with him more often so that she could keep an eye on W, the sources said, added. But wasn't she the one that went alone to Egypt or someplace like that? I mean,
yes.
He said, put her on a plane, get her out of here. I want a shot.
Right.
When the levees broke in New Orleans, it apparently made him reach for a shot, said one insider. He poured himself a Texas-sized shot of straight whiskey. And
Jim Beam, I think, huh?
Right, and tossed it back. The First Lady was shocked and shouted, "Stop, George, stop!" Actually, I added the extra stop. Keep those quotes accurate.
Yes, yes.
Laura gave him an ultimatum. Before, it's Jim Beam or me. She doesn't want to replay that nightmare, especially now when it's such tough going for her husband.
Especially since he has his finger on the nuclear bombs, too.
That was a continued quote from the insider.
Right.
Now, Bush is under the worst pressure of his two terms in office, and his popularity is near an all-time low. The handling of the Katrina crisis and troop losses in Iraq have fueled public discontent and pushed Bush back to drink.
Ooh.
To the drink and to the brink. A Washington source said, "The sad fact is that he has been sneaking drinks for weeks now." Laura may have only just caught him, but the word is his drinking has been going on for a while in the Capitol. He's been in a pressure cooker for months. The war in Iraq, the loss of American lives, has deeply affected him. He takes every soldier's life personally. It has left him emotionally drained. That, I don't believe.
I don't believe that.
I don't think he gives any thought to the people that are killed.
Right.
I think it's political prospects and the pressure that the real president, Cheney,
right,
is placing upon him to
could
tone
be
it down. The result is he's taking drinks here and there, likely in private, a sneak drinker, to cope. And now with the worst crisis domestically in his administration over Katrina, you pray his drinking doesn't go out of control. I don't pray anything myself. Right. And every time they throw, I immediately suspect a quote as soon as the word praise or bless show up, because that's a planted, look how good I am. This right. is what I'm saying. I must be telling you the truth.
Right.
Another source said, I'm only surprised to hear that he hadn't taken a shot sooner before Katrina. He was at his wit's end. I have known him for years. He's been a good old Texas boy forever. George had a drinking problem for years that most professionals would say needed therapy. He doesn't believe in it, therapy that is. He never got it. He drank his way through his youth, through college, and well into his 30s. Everyone's drinking around him. Another source said a family member told me that they fear George is falling apart. The First Lady has been assigned the job of gatekeeper. Bush's history of drinking dates back to his youth. Speaking of his time as a young man in the National Guard, sort of,
the champagne
he has said,
that ironically.
One thing I remember and I'm most proud of is my drinking and partying. Those were the days of my friends. Those were the good old days. At age 26 in 1972, he reportedly rounded off a night's boozing with his 16-year-old brother, Marvin, by challenging his father to a fight.
I love it.
Yeah.
Come on, Dad, let's put up your dukes.
On November 1st, 2000, on the eve of his first presidential election, Bush acknowledged that in 1976, he was arrested for driving under the influence of alcohol near his parents' home in Maine. That's Kennebunkport, near my hometown.
Right, your old stomping grounds.
Yeah. And I can just see those state troopers with the smoky bear hats and the
brims.
They used to stop me all the time. But that's because I was just
young. That's because you had all those peace signs all over your Volkswagen van, Tom. The big peace sign was like a big target for those guys. But that's another story.
Yes, exactly. And his driving license privileges were temporarily suspended in Maine. I'm not proud of that, he said. I've made some mistakes. I occasionally drank too much, and I did that night. I learned my lesson. Yes, right. I'm not going to go on with that. But that gets the point across, is that now... You know, actually, I think we talked about it several times.
Yes.
On some of the appearances on TV, I kept looking at him saying, you know, he's either on drugs
right.
or he's drinking again, because look at those eyelids. Look at his slow speech. He's actually slurring some of those words if you listen carefully.
Right.
And so you can't, I imagine that a lot of presidents drink, most of them, in fact.
I'm sure they
all
do.
A lot of presidents take drugs. Most of them, some for medical reasons,
right.
Others for commercial reasons.
Apparently Nixon was on drugs. Maybe he got them from Elvis,
sure.
The time Elvis visited
Kennedy,
him.
Kennedy, you know, like all of them.
Yeah, right.
But they didn't deny it because they never talked about it.
Right.
But he denies it, and apparently it's another lie.
Well, you know, the thing about this story is this really isn't the first time this has been out in the media. And I went on to the internets and found the story that we actually referenced a couple years ago. It's by Catherine Van Wormer, and Catherine Van Wormer is a professor of psychology. Let me tell you exactly. She is a professor of social work at the University of Northern
Iowa. She must be
Iowa.
A communist. Social work?
Right.
Welfare?
She's a welfare queen, obviously. Co-author of Addiction Treatment, A Strengths Perspective. But she wrote a story, this dates from October 11th, 2002. Not 2003, 2004, 2002. So this has been out there. And the title of the story is Dry Drunk Syndrome and George W. Bush. It was, this particular version of it was published on counterpunch.org. And I'll just read a little paragraph, the first paragraph. It reads, ordinarily, I would not use this term, but when I came across the article, Dry Drunk, Is Bush Making a Cry for Help, in the American Politics Journal by Alan Bisbort, I was ready to concede, in the case of George W. Bush, the phrase may be quite apt. It's a fairly lengthy story. You can find it by doing a Google search on it, but it's a six-page printed-out story. But basically...
We'll link it on our site.
Yeah, we'll link it. But basically, Professor Van Wormer, states that, because Bush claims that he went cold turkey, basically, from not drinking to having to talk with Billy Graham and having his born-again experience and whatnot.
This walk on the beach where you should see how exploitable these right-wing right. Christers are.
But you got, she goes in fairly good detail. But the problem is, according to this and several other stories I read, that people that go from an addiction to cold turkey, they really display a lot of habits that Bush has displayed. Namely, they're very they view the world in a very black and white way.
It's on the wagon or off the wagon.
Yeah, basically. But I think this needs we need to be reminded of this.
There's a book out that goes into this whole topic. I'm embarrassed to say I can't remember the author's name or the title, but I'll find it again and post it on the website, www.ltobs.blogspot.com,
right.
So that you can check me out. But some of the personality displays that we've seen, sudden outbursts of anger and frivolity, as in these Kenny Boy for Ken Lay and things
right.
like that.
Brownie,
you know, right. these are all kind of parent symbols or signs of that sort of thing, according to the author. There are many others. This guy's actually a psychiatrist, I believe, and an authority on what he's writing about, so don't believe me, believe him. Read the book. I'll give you the title on
right.
the blog.
Well, let me just read a quote from Van Wormer's story, and it reads, "Bush's rigid, judgmental outlook comes across in virtually all his speeches. To fight evil, Bush is ready to take on the world in almost a biblical sense. Bush possesses the characteristics of the dry drunk in terms of his incoherence while speaking away from the script." That's very true. "His irritability with anybody, for example, Germany's Gerhard Schroeder, who dares disagree with him, and is dangerous obsessing about only one thing, Iraq." So
There's another aspect of this is that it's been suggested in my reading that he is also dyslexic. I've often wondered if they're calling the inability to keep your brain focused as a sign of dyslexia or some sort of brain condition as opposed to just being slightly drunk.
Right. Well, I have a little bit of experience with this, and this is my own personal theory. First of all, I don't know whether Bush is left-handed or right-handed, because that does make a big difference in dyslexic. It really does. Previous to George W. Bush, our last two presidents, Clinton and the first Bush, were both left-handed. I'm left-handed, too, and there's only about 7 or 8% of us in the world that are left-handed. And most people that are dyslexic are left-handed. And I can understand that because a lot of times when I look at things, I look at them from right to left. When somebody tells me to turn right, I turn left. And it's a very common thing. I've always been that way. I've never had
the... Well, that's because the sign says right turn only.
Right. That's why I'm a lefty. But in all seriousness, I think everybody that is left-handed has a certain degree of dyslexia.
Well,
And it's because we view things slightly different and we're in a right-handed world. So.
Right. Well, and also, I speak from some experiences that many years ago, I got whacked on the head.
Mm-hmm.
And I never had problems finding words before. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, I took on some of the symbols I can see,
right.
these symptoms of dyslexia, because I would not be able to keep the words straight. I'd reverse words,
right.
or suddenly reach a common word that I would have problem, or I still do, you can tell by listening to me on the radio, common words that I know but can't for the moment call it.
Right.
Anyway,
Tom, I think that's actually called old age.
That could be a factor. I'm hoping it doesn't get worse than that, well, the wage does. But anyway, so these are things that we know a little bit about personally.
Right.
And so this isn't just like reading out of the National Enquirer.
Right.
And throwing it back at Bush.
No, but, getting back to Bush's alleged status as a dry drunk, according to everything that I've read the last few years about it, he does display the classic symbols of dry drunk.
He did it too.
What's that?
Symbols instead of symptoms. It's catchy.
It's catchy. Dyslexia. Tom, yes, it's dyslexia. Catchy. Jesus. Verbal dyslexia, I guess. the symptoms of being a dry drunk. And psychologists and sociologists will say that people who go cold turkey typically, you know, even if they haven't had a drink, and let's just, for the sake of argument, say Bush hasn't had a drink, you know, let's say that's not an accurate report, for the sake of argument, he nonetheless never went into therapy to overcome his addiction, and his personality, because of that, is playing out. Now, the one question I have on this whole thing, you're grimacing over there, Tom, go ahead.
For the sake of argument,
yes,
and to show both sides,
mm-hmm.
And now I forget what you said that prompted it, because I've talked about it too much.
Psychologist, sociologist.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, the therapy.
Right.
Therapy would have cured him. I'm suspicious of that all the time, because, in fact, most therapy is lifelong. You never get cured because the checks would stop.
Right. That's true. I agree with you on that,
okay,
too.
Okay, so when they say he didn't get therapy, I'm not sure that therapy would have done, would have made any difference.
Well, that's true. That's a good point. And, you know, I agree with you on the thing of therapy. But, I mean, even initial counseling or some sort of behavior modification.
Or going back in from time to time and the doctor saying, well, you see, you're doing what we said you would do. Don't do it anymore. And at least be aware
right.
of his sudden outbursts of anger not being a great thing. And,
right.
So, yeah, you're right.
I mean, I agree with you. I'm not into, you know, I view certain types of therapy with a very a suspicious eye, a cynical eye, maybe you might
good,
even
but
say.
No cure.
Right. But this guy reputedly went from drinking heavily to going cold turkey overnight.
Cold sober.
Yeah. And everything I've read through the years, when people do that, it's they still have the characteristics of what, you know, that what took them to that addiction before they went cold turkey. So the reason, you know, do we need to take a break? Are we getting there? Oh, let's see. Yeah, you know, we probably do need to take a break, but let's just sum up this thing. The reason we bring this up is because we want to frame a lot of our discussion for the rest of the program on Bush's kind of behavior and how it's affecting our country and the politics of the day. You know, it's something that you need to really keep in mind as we go through, you know.
Let me just say, for the summing up,
yes.
is that at this moment, I'm not drunk, Dan's not drunk, but the president might be.
Maybe we should be drunk, you know? Maybe that would, maybe I would say...
Maybe we'd be more sympathetic?
Yeah, maybe. Well, you're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street. We're heard on KRBS 107.1 FM in Oroville, California. And we thank you for joining us. We're going to take a short musical break, and we'll be right back.
Well, it downsized the dumpster on me. What am I to do with my debris? There ain't no more room left for me, so I'm headed for the D-U-M-P. There I was driving down the road, headed for the diner with a load. And when I got there, much to my despair, the dumpster had shrunk a size, and so, well, it downsized the dumpster on me. What am I to do with my debris? There ain't no more room left for me, so I'm headed for the D-U-M-P. And when I got there, they said, what you got in there? Can you kindly pay us a fee? Dump some here, dump some there, can't just dump it anywhere. Sounds like a racket to me. Well, it downsized the dumpster on me. What am I to do with my debris? I'm headed for the D-U-M-P. Take it! Yeah. That's right. Woo! And said, what's the deal, Renee? It's just some construction debris. The dumpster's fake, my good friend Nate. I did not negotiate. It's got nothing to do with me. Well, if downsize the dumpster on me, what am I to do with my debris? There ain't no more room left for me. So I'm headed for the dump. Yes, I'm headed for the dump. Yes, I'm headed for the dump.
And that was Nelson Nadel, who was the musician composer of that song. And who is Nelson Nadel, Tom?
And the singer.
Yeah,
that's right.
Who is he?
Well, you couldn't tell by the last name.
Tom Nadel.
But we're related. He's my cousin. I'm Tom Nadel. He's Nelson Nadel.
Oh, very good. And where does Nelson hail from?
Portland, Maine.
Portland, Maine. Maine. Aren't all the Nadels from Maine where they drink regular coffee?
Well, actually, back east, Nadel is a really common.
Is it?
Smith. Fewer of those than Nadel. And they stretch mostly from Quebec into Maine, down in Massachusetts, but then there's a big branch of the family out there in Minnesota, Wisconsin, okay. That area, wherever, those middle states.
Hey, that's where I'm from, man. I'm from Michigan.
But anyway, and all spring from one progenitive guy.
Is that right?
Back in 1604 or 8, I think, when they came to the
prolific. States. Was it chased out of France or something?
In a prison ship, I believe. But anyway, he's done the music. He's great, and he doesn't charge us for it.
Right, and that's the best part, is royalty. But it's very good. I like the title of that song, too. It's called, what's it, Downsize My Dumpster?
Right, yes, and that comes from him having his being informed that he was going to pay the same price for his monthly or weekly garbage service, but the size of the dumpster would be halved.
So basically, he had a 50% increase in his dumpster fees.
Right, packaging the price.
Yeah, right. Well, as I said, that is a royalty-free song, too. So we like that here on Left Turn on Bird Street. So now that we've put our little nepotism plug in here, Tom, what else do we have on the agenda here?
Well, getting back to journalism and news,
yes.
What worries guys like us about the current administration and the political philosophy behind it is what it does to the United States and freedom, what's left of it, in the United States. And these are some stories, starting with one about Robert Fisk, an excellent, world-famous, award-winning, esteemed reporter for the Independent newspaper in London. And a story comes out this week that I found it on Free New Mexican, which had been linked by Danny Schechter of News Dissector. Another, it's a journalism watch blog site. Top Middle East reporter Robert Fisk barred from the U.S. Can you believe?
No, well, you know what? I actually can.
Yes,
unfortunately, I actually can believe it.
Because he speaks
the truth.
He speaks the truth. He also speaks Arabic. And so he goes out and gets his own news and doesn't get it from a PIO.
Yeah, that.
Anyway, U.S.
I didn't realize he spoke Arabic. That's very interesting.
He's married to a Lebanese woman, I believe. He lives in Beirut.
Right.
And covered all the Beirut troubles.
Right.
And is well-regarded on both in Western journalism and in Middle Eastern journalism. And he has excellent service sources.
Right.
And so he gets his story straight, and he doesn't spout a Republican Party line.
Well, can't have that.
So as a result, U.S. immigration officials refused Tuesday of this last week to allow Robert Fisk, longtime Middle East correspondent for the Independent newspaper in London, to board a plane from Toronto to Denver. Fisk was on his way to Santa Fe for a sold-out appearance in the Lannan Foundation's Readings and Conversations series broadcast Wednesday night over a station back there.
Right.
Fisk was told that his papers were not in order. Show us your papers! I think you've seen that one. Last-minute arrangements were made for Amy Goodman, another radio, like us, only better, host of Democracy Now!, to interview Fisk via satellite from a television station in Toronto. Fisk was projected on a large screen on stage at Santa Fe's Lenzic Performing Arts Center. A multiple award-winning British journalist, Fisk has filed many eyewitness reports on the U.S. invasion of Iraq. In other words, he goes out, gets his story, comes back and files it,
right,
as opposed to being handed it and copying it down and sending it back.
Right.
A dauntless street reporter, Fisk has criticized many U.S. reporters in Baghdad for what he called hotel journalism,
right,
a phrase he coined for reporters covering the war from the safety of their heavily fortified hotel suites and offices. We have a complete dossier on you, Mr. Fisk, said Colonel Strasser in Casablanca.
Right, shocked. Well, on one level, it doesn't say what grounds they use for denying them entry, though.
His papers weren't in order.
What papers? I mean,
his passport.
He's a British citizen.
Well, you see
that
stamp? Part of it went off the page.
I suppose, they're going to get him on a technicality, but really what it is, it's political retribution. I mean,
right. You can put it in the paper, but you can't get in the United States.
Right. Well, it goes back, I guess it's about 2 years ago now, or was it a year ago, when Cat Stevens was denied entry because he was on the terrorist watch list. The guy who
Why? Because he was
training.
Muslim.
Right, yeah. Because he's a Muslim. So this guy is not let in because he is not towing the administration line. So, it's just pure political retribution. That's all it is. You can't say anything else but that.
Would you think that that's an isolated incident?
There's more? You mean there's more, Tom?
And same vein, different location. Ariana Huffington, mm-hmm, on her Huffington's website,
right,
reports that this Kafkaesque tale, the disturbing ease. Oh, I'm sorry. If I put my glasses on, I could tell ease from case.
Tom, see, when I read, I got to take my glasses off. You got to put yours on. What's the deal here?
Okay, the disturbing case of Abdul Amir Yunus Hussein, a CBS cameraman who has been detained by U.S. forces in Iraq for over 5 months without a shred of evidence being publicly presented against him, has taken yet another bizarre turn, Huffington says.
Mm-hmm.
She was a conservative. I like her.
Right.
She writes pretty straight stuff, and she's got that great new Huffington Post site.
Right.
As reported by the New York Times and Wall Street Journal, Huffington says, last week, Hussein, 25, is a freelancer who has found himself trapped in a nightmare of secrecy, suspicion, and legal uncertainty since being wounded by U.S. forces while filming the aftermath of a car bombing in Mosul on April 5th. At first, the military expressed regret for Hussein's minor injuries. Sorry about that, guy.
Tough luck.
But 3 days later, they arrested him, claiming he had been engaged in anti-coalition activity. Doesn't that sound like a nice umbrella?
Yeah, right.
Thus began his Kafkaesque legal odyssey, which has seen the reportedly timid reporter shuttled from prison to prison, including Abu Ghraib, while the military has changed its story multiple times, refused to release any evidence against him, refused to let Hussein be visited by friends or relatives, and certainly not a lawyer, and rebuffed the efforts of CBS to have his case adjudicated in a conclusive manner. The latest twist in the case came earlier this week, which would be last week. Back in July, already 3 months after his arrest, Hussein was scheduled to have his case heard by the Combined Review and Release Board, another Kafka title.
Another.
A panel made up of American military officials and Iraqi government officials. Oh, impartial.
Yeah.
In preparation for the hearing, CBS News submitted evidence it had gathered supporting Hussein's innocence. But the hearing was abruptly canceled and his case turned over to Iraqi criminal authorities. They, in turn, reviewed the case and, in late August, declined to prosecute him. In other words, they found him innocent of the charges.
Right.
Once again, we see that Iraqi authorities were sovereign only in as long as they agree with the Americans actually in charge.
Right.
This time, they didn't agree. So, instead of releasing him, as the court had directed, the military kept him in jail, claiming it had access to classified information the Iraqi authorities didn't have.
I think that's called a puppet government, is it not?
It is. That's it.
Go ahead.
It's also, you know, can you imagine a prosecutor getting a not guilty verdict? Oh, wait a minute. We didn't tell you everything, so you've got to change that, right? Another hearing with the CRRB, that's a bizarrely named place that I just mentioned, was set for September 22nd, just a couple of days ago. But on September 12th, CBS News was informed that the hearing had already been held.
Jeez.
Without Hussein. Didn't need him.
Wait, they had a hearing for the guy, and he wasn't allowed to go to his own hearing.
He probably didn't even hear about it. Without Hussein, his lawyer, or anyone from CBS News in attendance, then on Tuesday of last week, came word that the CRRB had decided to keep Hussein in jail. Meaning what the military planned to do.
Right.
With no review of his case for another 6 months. Says Huffington, it's an outrage. Well, it certainly is.
It really is.
But that's what it would have been, an outrage in 1999.
Right.
But after 2000,
right,
it's not.
Well, that's, you know, it's actually kind of par for the course, you know. I mean, it's...
This is what you can expect. They're doing it over there, and as soon, before the 2008 election, the military takes over the United States, as I've been saying will happen, then this is what you're going to get here.
Now, see, I don't think that the military. Yeah, you know, I'm gonna play devil's. I'm gonna play devil's advocate, but it's really what they're gonna do is they're gonna preserve the First Amendment in kind of name only. But what they're gonna do is it's gonna be maybe not a mild coercion, but they're gonna, you know, they're going to blackmail people and threaten them basically.
You're talking about the philosophy, the mechanics of the philosophy, I think. That's the philosophy. The mechanics will be that there will be no re-election. There will be no election. There will
no
be
election.
No election. It'll be postponed for safety reasons or for security reasons.
You really
think that? That's or some combination. It'll be imaginative. It'll be something I won't have exactly outlined. But mark my words, there will be no election. Or if there's an election, it'll be have the same sort of outcome as the one for Hussein has had, the
right
one that they want to come out.
Well, you know, they could take the Philippine model in 1972, you know, just before Marcos declared martial law. He basically rigged an explosion of a political opponent and said it was blamed it on communists.
Sure, yeah.
And he declared martial law basically.
Exactly.
You know, then for the next 14 years, not including the six previous years, he plundered the Filipino economy and the treasury and everything like that. So I guess it's not without precedent. But do you really think that in 2008, Tom, elections are going to be suspended? Or, well, I would agree with you; they're going to be rigged, probably. But I think they'll go through with them.
I think they will actually be postponed.
Well, our listeners are going to have to stay with
us on record
for three more years to see if this comes true. I certainly hope you're wrong.
Three more years? You know, I only got a warranty.
2005.
I only got a 1 year warranty on this mixer. You think I'd have got a three?
Well, now that we're on two or three radio stations, maybe the government's going to start listening to us, and you're going to have a knock on your door in the middle of the night, Tom, and they're going to car this off.
But now, if you think all that stuff was bad,
mm-hmm,
you know, freedom's gone, Constitution shredded,
right?
Actual election coming, a military government imposed. This is even worse. Two movie stars are thinking about running for governor of California.
Well, who are the two movie stars?
Well,
one is probably Arnold, obviously.
Well, obviously
he's already declared, I think, right, has he not?
And the other is Warren Beatty.
Oh,
Warren Beatty bashes Schwarzenegger, may run for governor himself, is the headline.
Well.
Recently at a Democratic convention, this information came out and was reported by Carl Limbacher at Newsmax, another website that we sometimes... This is a conservative website.
A very conservative website.
Okay, and... actor Warren Beatty accused Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger on Thursday, that was 9/23, night, accusing him of governing by show, by spin, by cosmetics and photo ops.
And by a perpetual campaign.
Well, is that not Bush, too?
Yeah, that's true.
Beatty remarks came at a California Nurses Association convention. Not a Democratic Party association, as I was saying. The CNA has emerged in the last year as one of Schwarzenegger's chief critics. Beatty is a Democrat and longtime political activist. He's been mentioned as a possible challenger to Schwarzenegger next year. He didn't announce his candidacy as many in the convention crowd had hoped, but he didn't rule it out either.
Ooh.
Said Beatty, I believe if a private citizen is able to affect public opinion in a constructive way, he doesn't have to be an elected public servant to perform a public service. Uh-huh.
That's a little double talk there.
Yeah, that's just, I'm keeping my options open.
Right.
Beatty attended the convention with his wife, actress Annette Bening, and a good actress she is too, besides being good. Actor Sean Penn was seated at Beatty's table.
Now, wait a minute, would Sean Penn maybe run for lieutenant governor? He'd be kind of like an enforcer. Go ahead, I just had to throw that out there.
No, I'd like to see him appointed attorney general.
Sean Penn?
Yeah.
Is it in the Constitution that you have to be an attorney to be attorney general?
No.
Okay, then he's our attorney general.
No, they usually are.
Right.
But no.
Nothing constitutionally stopping them.
All you have to do is be over 18 and a citizen of California.
And register to vote, I think, probably.
Yeah, something like that.
Probably a U.S. citizen, I would suspect, too, wouldn't you?
Schwarzenegger is governor.
But he's an American citizen.
Right, but he's a naturalized.
Naturalized, but he is a citizen nonetheless.
Details.
Right.
Anyway, Beatty mocked Schwarzenegger, a former champion bodybuilder and fellow Hollywood celebrity. Beatty said Arnold had taught him years ago to do 15 repetitions rather than 10 because you get a better look that way. That's like, what a dig. I love it. Anyway, Beatty called a Schwarzenegger-backed November 8th ballot measure, that's in California, union-busting and fascist. One of the governor's press agents said, we don't care that much about Warren Beatty, and based on his ticket sales from the past generation, I doubt anyone else does either. Well, no, this isn't like his political... It's his ticket sales. This is not like add to the theory that... Governor Hollywood.
Right. Hey, our candidate's bigger box office draw than your candidate.
Why vote? Go to the movies.
You know? Vote with your ticket sales. The Hollywood people have got to love that. Yeah, it's a good way to geek up box office sales.
Beatty played a U.S. senator. Experienced enough.
Yeah.
U.S. senator in the 1998 movie Bullworth.
Great movie, by the way. Actually, you ever seen it?
Right, well, you know, the twist was that he was a senator that told the truth.
Right.
And couldn't otherwise do anything but.
Well, mainly because he put a price tag on his head to be killed.
So, oh, right.
Yeah. Great movie.
Yeah. He talked about running for president in the 2000 election race.
I remember
But decided against it. A statewide field poll taken in June showed 24% of California voters were inclined to elect Beatty governor. 53% said they'd rather not, and 23% had no opinion. So if you take the no opinions and the 24%, you get 47%, and that makes a tight race.
Right. So that'd be interesting. We could have the battle of the Hollywood box offices here.
I'd vote for Ann Bening.
Annette Bening? Yeah, I would too. But, I remember when in 2000, you had told me about that quite a bit, Warren Beatty, and that was kind of interesting because he threw some trial balloons out there, and obviously he didn't run for it, but it would be for no other reason, just the
intelligence a mark of running or choosing not to run?
Well, that's true.
I'm smart enough not to run when everything's stacked against me, but smart enough to run, and if when they're not, win and do a good job.
Right. Well, Warren Beatty, he's a pretty smart guy. He is, if I'm not mistaken, a graduate of Northwestern University, which is really a very prestigious university in Evanston, Illinois. And he's been, he's been active on the political scene for many, 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 many years. So,
and he sits at the table with Sean Penny,
Sean Penn. Yeah, I kind of like Sean Penn, even though he's a hothead. He's a pretty good actor, actually.
This is my opinion of him. It changed remarkably because he is the son of a movie director,
right?
And I think he's got a brother, Chris Penn, is also. And I figure this is just, and Daddy got him a job,
right?
He actually turned out to be a very good actor.
Yeah, he is.
Okay, well, that's his business. But then, from what he was doing on the side, he appeared to be intelligent.
Right.
So you have an interest, and he's not even particularly good looking.
Right.
Okay, so by not being good looking, being intelligent,
right,
and that put him back in my.
And he has directed too, and
he's a very talented guy.
Well, we just got a few minutes left in this segment. We got about three or four minutes, but. This wasn't even on our agenda, but now that we bring it up, this is why, constantly the Republicans and conservatives continually bash Hollywood. They bash Hollywood liberal elites and whatnot. But you know what? As much as the Republicans bash these guys, a lot of these guys are very intelligent. They bash, Warren Beatty, Sean Penn. Another one they've bashed on and off in the past is Robert Redford. I've actually met Robert Redford.
Really?
Yeah. When I lived in Santa Fe, he came into where I was working, and because he was filming the Milagro Beanfield War.
I can top that. I once stood next to Clint Eastwood in a bar.
Ooh, you just made my day.
Movie stars, everybody just associates with them.
But the thing of it is they
I like that movie, by the way, Milagro Beanfield.
Oh, that's a great movie.
That was political, very much.
Oh yeah, that was really a good movie. If you ever get a chance to see a movie, it's really authentic too, in terms of these northern New Mexico towns. A really good movie.
And if you're not like most of our listeners and can read.
Yes,
it's a good book.
Yeah. I read the book too. It's a trilogy of books. I can't think of the author's name. It escapes me. He's a New Mexican based writer. It's not Tony
Last
Hiller.
Last Cowboy. I can think of his books, but I can't.
But anyhow, just getting back real briefly to the Hollywood bashing, conservatives love to bash Hollywood liberals, and they love to associate it with Hollywood because it's an easy.
You mean like Ronald Reagan, all those liberals?
Yeah, right. And that brings up the exact point. Yeah, Ronald Reagan. And Arnold Schwarzenegger. So, maybe we should start calling them Hollywood conservative types, and start bashing them.
And so I guess we're coming to the close to this segment.
Yes.
We got a story that we'll probably pick up along with a guest, Chuck Smith.
Next hour.
Is School for Scandal. I love this one.
School for Scandal.
Yes, it's about the corruption that I promised earlier. In government.
Okay, well, you're listening to Left Turn on Bird Street, and we're heard on our flagship station, KRBS, in Oroville, California, every other Monday from 8 a.m. to 9:55. And we're also heard frequently on our new affiliate, KQRP, in Salida, California. Thanks for joining us today. We certainly appreciate you spending some time.
And let's not forget WCRV.
That's right.
Cash rebate value.
That's right. Our good friend Carl in Cherry Ridge, Pennsylvania. Right. So
I swear I'm going to get one of those antennas from him and put it right up here.
Yeah. We actually could. Marysville would be perfect for it because it's got the geographic limitations because of the levees and whatnot, which may or may not last.
2.4 square miles.
Right. So anyhow, stay with us and we'll be back in just a moment. Left Turn on Bird Street, copyright 2005 by Dan Gowerthy and Tom Nadel. Opinions expressed on Left Turn on Bird Street do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or board of directors.